My name is William, brother of an alcoholic. I want to thank Gabe and the committee for inviting me to come spend this weekend with you good people. Say good morning. For you listening to this tape, I'm not awake yet, so I'm not responsible. I love that there's a lot of my friends here this weekend. When I saw the folk that were going to be here this weekend carrying the message and attending, I didn't mind being here. I absolutely love Scott and Linda. Miss Linda. I've been blessed to meet people on campus AA that would never have given me the time of day. And I also know that they're sicker than me. And they still wouldn't have given me the time of day. Well, that might be a perception problem. I'm not sure. If you're new in this room, I just want to suggest two things to you. First of all, the most important thing I think that I can share with you is that I love AA. And to me, those aren't just three words that I used to express to women in certain given circumstances. I found out I love you could be a menacing godlessness for me. And the other thing that I want to share with you newcomers is I strongly suggest you don't judge AA by my presentation this morning. You might judge me and deny yourself a chance at AA. I already know you're judging me. I saw which one of you were. I was looking at you. But just to let you know, I was judging you back, so we're equal. You know who judges the worst in Alcoholics Anonymous? Those who judge those who judge. My sponsor said, you know why they judge you, dummy? I said, no, because you're worthy of it. You know, I just stay sober, figure out what he meant by that. And then I found out, I said, oh, yeah, and then some. My sponsor said, whenever somebody says to you, they're judging you, just look at me and just say, yeah, me too. I love that. I'm a fortunate man. When I say to you that I love AA, what that means is I'm willing to get up at 7 a.m. when I've made a commitment to myself and I go to a marathon meeting that friends of mine are hosting. When I say I love AA, it means that I make this commitment in spite of my own selfish wants and demands. When I say I love AA, I suit up and I show up and I do what's asked of me by those in AA that I have a lot of high regard and respect for. My sponsor always told me, he says, I don't want you to say no to any legitimate AA request. You ever know if our sponsors always put those extra words that don't seem necessary? Like, legitimate? Let me tell you about a sponsor. I am kind of frothy. Like, I don't like self-centered. It sounds icky. I like narcissistic. Don't you? Doesn't that sound more therapeutical? So I told my sponsor, I'm not self-centered, I'm narcissistic. He says, no, Bunny, you are narcissistically incestuous. I said, what? I'd heard the incest before, but I didn't know how that related to me. So like an idiot, I said to you, I always had to ask my sponsor what he meant. I just couldn't just walk away. And I said, what do you mean narcissistically incestuous? It means no matter what you do, you just continue to screw yourself. Nobody's got to be involved with you. I hated my sponsor. I hated his guts. I hated his forging walk on. God, I hated him. And I miss him so much now that he's gone. I hope someday that if you're an alcoholic of my type and you say to yourselves, I hate my sponsor, I hope one day that when your sponsor passes that you feel the pain that I felt. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I didn't know I could feel that way. And I'll tell you what, I'm glad that I was in the middle of AA with people I'd only known a few hours when I got word my sponsor passed away and went to that big meeting. These people that were once strangers became part of my family. And that's the way it is. And I respect my family. I show high regard for my family. I used to be irreverent, disrespectful. Man, I was going to tell you, Scott, can I say something, Scott? Scott and I'm going to tell you a story. I love the guy. We both served in Southeast Asia. And I was mentioning that I was going to tell you what this looked like to me. And Scott says, no, we don't want to do that. And I said, okay. So I'm not. And now some of you new fellow are going to hear another word I say. So you're going to wonder, what is that a dance for to me? And if you're already wondering that, you're in the right room. You see, I'm an alcoholic, and I didn't know what that meant. And I've got to report to you, I was in Alcoholics Anonymous a long time before I truly believed deep down here where long-term sobriety comes. I didn't believe it down here. I believed it up here enough to stay sober and do what I was told through the power of suggestion. And thank God that before I left, it traveled from here to here. And it got in here. I got something to tell you, newcomer. Once it gets in here, I have to walk away for it to go away. And that walk isn't very far, by the way. Giving up a commitment here or there. Shirking off a responsibility here or there. Starting to tell people no when they ask me to sponsor them. I know, because I traveled that dubious path when I was trying to leave AA. You know, it's hard to leave AA when you've got a million commitments. It took me 5 years from the time I made my mind up to leave AA for me to exhaust the commitments I had made in LA. But by then I changed my mind. Do you know what I mean? It's ridiculous, the things they ask you to do around here. What's that got to do with alcoholism? I ain't drinking. And I love to drink. I love Budweiser. King of beer. You see, I always smoke and drink things that had labels. Like Anheuser-Busch. Oh, I love that logo. And I smoked Pall Mall cigarettes because on the package it said wherever particular people congregate. And if you were to come visit me at my dumpster, I would smoke a Pall Mall X because I'm particular. And I'd be there with no teeth, you know? Outside my dumpster. Smoker of that. There's no filter, so it's all tobacco in my mouth. But I ain't got a piece, it don't matter, I ain't got a filter anyway. And I'm thinking I'm pretty sexy. Don't you like that? There's something wrong with me. I love them guys for today. I'm not mad at him. I got to work for him. I played song for Anheuser-Busch. I did. 3 years. Sometimes they had to come find me under the bleachers. I love Budweiser. Let me tell you something. Some days I miss it. And I don't think I'm committing blasphemy in AA either. Sometimes I miss it. There's times I go buy a Budweiser burger. Then I gotta slow down and have a moment of silence. I do. I root when I see the Clydesdales in a parade. Something is gone. That's not natural. Now I was told if all you drank was beer, you can't be alcoholic. And I said, right. And I went out and drank more beer. And then I switched to fine wine. Ripple. Moonshine, strawberry, hell. Yeah. I knew that would get this session. I was standing before the meeting, trying to figure out what's safe to sell or not. You know, Ripple ain't never sold great. You know why I like Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill? Because when I kill, because I'm a pisser, I'm a projectile pisser. And I tell you what, when the policeman came, I'd have swore he said stand up. When he said shut up. And so I ain't got no teeth. So I got false teeth to the government. They always fit. From a projectile filter. And when I'm drinking Bourbon Storm Strawberry Hill, when I puke, it looks like I'm bleeding internally. And people say in the bar, say, oh my God, my friend, shut down that guy. Stomach cancer or something. And it just says, don't even buy me beer. That's what you do. You knew about giving before you got there, eh? And I like little Mad Dog 21. Let me tell you something. When you're living in a dumpster, and you got a quick bottle of Budweiser that's empty, and I travel around to all the taverns and liquor stores and get in the dumpsters out back, and I try to empty whatever bottle I can that's available, and I put it in my quick bottle of Budweiser, and then I drink it together. I mix it up if I happen to drink. So I want to tell you what happens if you drink that long enough. We'll give you a condition you might not have heard about here at the Laughlin. Some of you have. I heard you this weekend. For alcoholic terminal diarrhea. I swear before God I had diarrhea for 6 to 8 years, not a day off. My sponsor told me my first spiritual awakening just might be a solid bowel movement. And let me tell you something, I thought it might work. Because I didn't want to do it again. When I came to AA, I had my own table with the group. When you've had diarrhea for 6 years, you've got to have good decision-making skills. And split-second timing. You know what I mean? And I'll tell you where my favorite room in the world is. It's the bathroom. I'm going to tell you why. Interesting things go on in there. I was on my knees before I came to that. Wow. See, my wife and I, we fought one day at a time. When I was somewhat lucid, I could win. But she could tell that I drank beyond the point of self-defense. And she pounded on me. She'd get on my back and ride me all the way to the bathroom, but the minute I could get into the bathroom, she'd drop my back. She wouldn't bring it. Because she knew bad things were going to happen. Not to her, but it might get her. One night we was having that fight that I'm telling you about, and I made it into the bathroom. She was pounding me. I could have, I was defenseless. And I made it into the bathroom, cracked the threshold, and had that relief like with the drink. She's gone. And then it all hit. And I'm hugging that bowl for everything. I mean, I am, and I feel bad. For everything, it all just cuts loose at the same time. And all of a sudden, I'm in the bowl. And all of a sudden, I experience a moment of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. My dresser blows out right into the store. Now, do you know how, when something good happens, time goes like this? Right? You got to ask somebody. That was good, right? But when bad things happen, it goes like this. You get to watch it coming and going. I was watching my feet circle the drain. Can you imagine that? I want you to have that visual. My dresser is turning in the bowl, heading to the hole at the bottom. And I may be an alcoholic, but I got enough sense more. If they get down to the bottom before I do, they're gone. And I'm on welfare, I ain't getting a new set of teeth, so I can get after them. And I catch her right before they go down to shoot her. And I think to myself, wow, what the hell? I rinse them off and put them right back in. I sure miss drinking. Now I know that if you're new, that's hard to believe, because I got some store-bought teeth right now. But when I was new, I was a vision for you. I weighed 146 pounds. Right this minute, I weighed 258. I weighed 146 pounds. I didn't have any teeth, and my hair was scraggly and long down to my butt. I had a full beard and a mustache because I was embarrassed by the fact I didn't have any teeth. And I didn't know what happened to me. I mean, I'm just the way I was talking. What's wrong with me? The theme song we've heard all weekend from all those who carried the message thus far. What's wrong with me? I didn't know. I've been wanting to know my whole life. What's wrong with me? I came out of shoes singing, uh-oh. The book Alcoholics Anonymous suggests to me that I have a spiritual malady, a soul sickness, if you will, an illness of my mind and my emotions. Oh, thank God. I've been to a lot of good, well-meaning doctors and psychiatrists outside. Did I mention you have been psychiatrically institutionalized like 17 times? Did I mention that? Did I also mention, I don't mind. I like it there. It's warm and funky. And when you're in a dumpster, it's lower out there. Now, why would I like the psych ward? I'll tell you why. Because the way I think and the way I act, I can't get a date out there to say bye. Don't get ahead of me. I can tell some of you have been there. I'll tell you why. You put me in a co-ed psych ward, and I can get a date. And if she's on a Thursday, we're going to have a lot of dates. I got to tell you, newcomer, it ain't not like that sometimes. I got to tell you, many of you women are in your first year. I might connect you this weekend. I just might. Maybe even tonight before karaoke. Now, if I do that, if I come up to you, I'll say something like this, and I might even posture a little bit. I might come up to you and go like this. Hey. Would you like to have coffee? And talk about God. If I do that, run! For your life! In the book, the doctor's opinion says there are those too who suffer from grave. Grave. Interesting word, grave. Emotional and mental disorders. I don't know if it's good to be pleased about that or not, but it makes my life interesting. You know, I've been diagnosed everything. I've been diagnosed so much in the DSM-3 they had to write the DSM-4. You know, that's the diagnostic manual for psychiatric disorder. I've been diagnosed everything except schizophrenic because I couldn't convince them the voices were really voices. Because I heard voices. My sponsor said, yeah, they're you, Wayne. I said, that's your thinking. I come to find out, Alcoholics Anonymous has an answer for me if I am willing to give myself up and in absolutely 100% of me. The reason AA wasn't working for me, as I thought in the beginning, is because I hadn't completely surrendered, committed, submitted myself to the AA way. I just hadn't. It's awful hard to give up and give in 100%. I don't know how to do that, do you? Here's how I do it. I believe I was born with a surrender flag in hand. Because God knew what He was creating. He ain't going to just go quietly. Let's give Him the flag. And here's how it works for me. We all have it. But when you say let go and let God, I'll be there. So I shake hands. Forward. You get a sponsor. The sponsor just called me at 7 in the morning. I'm good. Till the crack of noon. 7 o'clock. Get a job. Get a job. Pay your child support. What's that got to do with AA? Shut up. I understand that I have an illness. Dr. Silkworth talks about it, and I have a good dose of it. But I want to share with you newcomers, just in case you might be interested, but more because it's fun for me. I'm going to tell you what my mental and emotional makeup is like before I tell you about my first drink, so that you really understand and comprehend why I love Budweiser the way I do. See, I believe I was born with this. Some people drink this way, into it. Others seem to be born this way. I seem to have been born with this predisposed condition. I believe it. I know why. I have evidence to prove it. I'm a thinker. No, I'm an analytic. I'm an analyst. I like to figure things out all by myself. You do too, don't you, boy? See, if you admit it, you got to get a sponsor. You know what I mean? I'm a thinker. And I love to analyze and contemplate, and my sponsor says prosecute. My mind, I think I was born without a head, yet a Rubik's Cube. Do you understand? How many of you understand a Rubik's Cube? Hang with me, this ain't the big book, but neither am I. And I don't mean no disrespect to the book. My mind is like a Rubik's Cube. Now, let me explain to you what I mean by that. There are 9 cubes to a size, 6 cubes, 54 cubes, 262 individual cubes, or 284, something like that. Mathematically, if you figure out the possible combination of all those cubes, do you know 34 quintillion? And that's how I think. I got a lot of thoughts going on at the same time. And they're firing whenever they want to. And I like it that way. Have you ever had somebody looking right at you and you're talking to them and then all of a sudden you realize they're not there anymore? Have you? They're looking right at you, but you know they're not there. And so you say to me, hey, what? Did you hear right there? Shut up, don't confront me. Huh? I'm listening to you. Really? What did I say? I've got 10 conversations going on all the time. What do they call that, ADHD? No, I'm just busy. There's a lot happening here. And emotionally, I'm a lot like a broken Maytag washing machine emotionally. I don't seem to have been born with a normal cycle. And I can stuck on agitate and spin. Funny thing, you lift the lid, pour in a couple of Budweisers, and it balances the load. Do you hear it? Budweiser ain't supposed to do nothing about that. You know, I didn't know what alcoholism was. I had no clue. And by the way, most of them out there, God love them, they mean well, they want to help us. But unless you got it, you cannot fight it. Unless you got it, you cannot render the understanding necessary to get nigh attention. And I'm not putting any disrespect. It's just that I have to get out of the business of trying to convince them what I've got. Instead, my job is to go find a newcomer and not convince them of nothing. Just tell them all about me. Okay, I can do that. Yeah, I can just talk about me. Yeah. And then they tell you how to do it, and that makes me, that bothers me. I don't like to be told nothing. I'm told my outstanding characteristic is defiance. And rebellion dogs my every step. Yeah, I'm in that school. I'm in the shoebox with AA. And you know that if you're in the shoebox, here's what I would like you to do. Get a sponsor, get a home group, and get busy in the steps. Because the shoebox is where I hung out when I was dying in AA. The shoebox is where the AA workers
Sneakers? Runners? And slippers hang out.
Well, this is a better place to be. Here's a question, how's that working for you? That makes me love AA. I'm coming from an alcoholic home. I didn't understand alcoholism. There's no X-ray. There's no MRI. There's no CAT scan that conclusively convinced me I had the spiritual illness of alcoholism. There is no test. Well, there's a 20-question test. It's not ours. There's a 2-question test in the big book. And then there's a qualifier. It's about control and enjoy my drinking. Can I control it? Sure. But it's not a lot of fun. And so I just give up and don't try to control so I win the test. Who cares about your stupid test? And then it says, step over to the nearest door and try some controlled drinking. Okay, I will. I did. It worked. For a minute. You ever watch somebody trying to control their drinking? That's normal. Earth people do it all the time. It bothers me. My sister's an earth person. And she's a standard. She drinks with impunity. I watch her abuse alcohol. She has ice. What? And then she doesn't drink it because she says it's just watered down too much. Yeah, you drink it. Go get your diary. I come from an alcoholic home. I'm not going to tell you much about that alcoholic home because I'm to talk about me and what I was like. And I will tell you this, if you want to get to know what my family was like, if you're really interested, I suggest you tune into Jerry Springer. On any given Tuesday night, I expect to see me showing up. I'm surprised Jerry hasn't called me yet. I'm one of Jerry's two. You know it's Jerry I'm talking about, dude. I've always known something's wrong with me. I don't know what it is. I'm so grateful for you and Alcoholics Anonymous because you reflected to me what's wrong with me. Instead of telling me what's wrong with me, you showed me. You showed me through your recovery, you showed me. You see, I thought I was crazy. I didn't tell you I'm crazy. I've been diagnosed by some of the finest psychiatrists in the state of Illinois. They put me under a microscope because I drank a bottle of tequila one night and I heard God tell me, by the way, that's why we have sponsors. I heard God tell me to go home and kill my mom and dad. So in the middle of the night, I went to my mom and dad's house and tried to take the life of my mom and dad. And they got a restraining order against me that lasted 10 years. They re-upped it every 90 days. I thought they should let it go. Let it go! I didn't mean to do that. I remember saying I didn't mean to do that. The doctors don't care about my infections. They're afraid I'm going to do it again. And you know what? I probably will, I thought. Without some type of power outside myself. Because in and of myself, I'm absolutely and completely powerless. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm baffled by other people, how they do things. It's like you've got the book on how to function in life. And I didn't. And I didn't understand that. I remember looking at my family and thinking, oh, Butler. I remember looking in the mirror. I was about 8 or 9 years old. Anybody else stand looking in the mirror? Contemplating? Wasn't prayer and meditation, let me tell you. Here's what I'm thinking to myself. Butler, it's too bad, pal. It's going to be a long life. And it's going to be lonely. Because you have a bad idea, pal. I don't know where that came from. Mama Butler never sat me down and said, hey, you poor little son. Boy, you are so ugly. Just out of mercy, I'd put you back if I could. That's not what she said, but that's what I heard. When she said, Wayne, I love you. Isn't that interesting? Do you know that I didn't know that my thinking is not my problem?
My thinking is a symptom of a far more serious problem than my thinking. Otherwise, the big book must be wrong. The big book says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, then we straighten out mentally and physically. You see, I thought I had a thinking problem, so I went to professional help trying to get my thinking problem solved. I come to AA, get sober, and find out, no, my thinking is not my problem, it is a problem. It's a symptom of a deeper problem. You have a perception disorder. I hear funny. Don't you? You know somebody say something to you and you look right back at them and repeat back to them what they said. And they go like this. Have you ever sponsored somebody? Gave them aggression? Ask them to repeat back to you what you just said. Very entertaining. But, oh, so that's what you heard me say? Yeah. That's where the 17 coming back must have come from. Right. And I feel funny. I don't necessarily feel in direct proportion to the stimulus that's creating the feeling. Like when I fall in love, you don't think you glance. Oh, oh, got ya. Haven't you ever been in love? I've been so much in love I've had to quit work. See, I'm powerless. I think I was born with an umbilical cord with no problem. So I've been running around my life using my umbilical cord like a lasso. May I play again? Because I need power. I need power. I'm creating what Wilson talked about was self-esteem, myth, and dependencies upon people, places, and things for my feelings of self-satisfaction, approval, safety, and protection. I don't know that I make. So then they think I need ruin. Yeah, speed me up to slow me down. I don't know what's wrong with me. I haven't had a drink yet, so I'm busy considering it. I'll give you one of my first self-diagnosis. Anybody self-diagnose? Oh, yeah. And they go to a doctor with your self-diagnosis, and they go like this. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I decided I was retarded. Eighth grade. I really identify with Patty in this regard. I'm like a loner. I am not much of a... I don't like people. Gabe, they think they're funny. I don't like people. It takes everything I got to pretend. I cry. I do. I probably need some professional help. By the way, if you're a therapist, don't try to help me. So do just fine. I don't basically like people. I'm afraid of people. I'm afraid. I don't like people. My psych report reads, Wayne does not play well with pets. And we all know if you don't like dogs, you can't be a girlfriend. I knew that. Nobody had to tell me that. I figured that all by myself. I saw these retarded kids. You might wonder what this got to do with alcoholism. This got everything to do with alcoholism. Because I felt like I didn't fit, I didn't belong, I wasn't a part of it. I constantly thought it was wrong with me, so I'm comparing my insides to your outsides, and I never match up. If I have to feel superior just to feel equal, I got to be patted on the back for everything I do before I do it, if I do it. I won't do it unless you tell me I'm good. Then I'll do it, baby. Just depends on how long you after you've rewarded me. I like the reward token experience. Tell me I'm wonderful, then I might do what you want. I'm a reverse people pleaser. What did I got to do with alcoholism? I'll tell you what. Because when I took my first drink, it was spiritual in nature. You hear me? I'm in the retarded. I got diagnosed retarded. I saw some retarded kids. I prayed with them. I thought, I must be retarded. I sit here. I made a decision. I am retarded. Nobody argued. Nobody tried to talk me out of it about that. The teacher said, oh, yeah, we knew something was wrong. They diagnosed me retarded in eighth grade, put me in a remedial class, moved me into a mental health group home. And I liked it there. It was better than the insanity of that alcoholic home I was in. You heard me? I didn't have to hide in no closets. I didn't have to hide under no beds. I'm not blaming. I'm reporting. There's a difference. Victims don't stay sober, folks. If I stand here this morning and tell you about them, I'm a victim. And my experience is victims don't stay sober. I must overcome all those influences. And AA can do that for me. It can give me the power to alter the course of my life. I'm a senior in high school. I'm not going to drink because I see what drinking's doing. I don't understand it, but I can relate the whiskey from my dad to the insanity of the family. I'm never drinking whiskey. And you can't get them in the group home anyway. Todd took those retarded kids on field trips. We all rode the short bus. We had a long, short little bus. And we were on field trips where we played putt-putt golf a lot. I want you to know I have 2 gold putters. I'm a winner. When I was a senior, Tom used to take us kids on field trips. And I was his favorite. He said I was the brightest of the lot. Tom has drank before. Tom takes me to the senior dance. I stand up against the wall. I'm afraid of everything. In the senior yearbook, they put a caption underneath your picture that describes your personality. You identify, you understand? You know what was under mine? Silent butler. I didn't talk to nobody except Tom. Nobody. I'm standing up against that wall watching all these kids dance, and Tom walks over to me with his long brown bottle with a red, white, and blue label. Budweiser. And he said, "Here, kid, drink this. It'll make you feel better." I'd have drank battery acid if Tom would have gave it to me. I drank that bottle and I said to Tom, I said, "Tom, that tastes terrible. I want a Pepsi Cola." Tom said, "That's okay, kid. You'll get used to it." Now, here's what Tom meant by that. Tom was then and is now a friend of mine. Tom does not understand what happened to me in AA. He thinks you're the greatest unretarding program in the world. He doesn't understand this. He doesn't care. He came one time to see me take a cake in my hometown and to give a little AA talk, and he said, "Well, I'm glad this is working for you." He's never got drunk by his own words since the first time. Here's what he meant when he told me I would get used to it. He got drunk the first time, and he got dizzy. Just a little cake. He puked, peed in the dresser, and almost went crazy trying to flush it. And he said, "I made a decision I was never doing that again," and he had me. That's what he said I would get used to. That didn't happen to me. Something happened between 4 to 5 Budweisers. I got some good luck and I couldn't stand it. I looked down the dance floor, spotted me a blue-eyed blonde dancing with some loser. I walked right up to him, never danced in my life, and said, "Can I cut in?" She said, "Yeah." Found out later that night, sex meant 2 people. Don't look away. I didn't know that. They didn't teach us sex ed in the special ed. They didn't even want us to have a clue how that worked. I don't think they wanted us reproducing. She ruined my sex life first night out of the gate. I've been having sex since I was 13. I thought I was good at it. She complicated the entire process. And I swore I was never doing that again. And I didn't. So I drank. Something about those 2 things seemed to go hand in hand for me. When I drink, I seem to have power not ordinarily my own. When I drink, I can stand up. When I drink, something comes over me. They use a word in the book called extemporaneous. The ability to act and react seemingly naturally and normally without any effort at all. It just happens. That ain't supposed to happen. Silkworth says in the book that's an illusion, the effect produced by alcohol. Really? That's what a normie would think.
You know what I mean?
No illusion of me. I'd get with it. When I drink, I'm with it. What's happening? And then I overshoot the mark. And I wonder what happens. And I go back to where I was, rest of fear, will discontent, stuck on agitation, spend money, what's wrong with me, and I drink another bottle of drink.
All gone bad. I think I look good without teeth. And the body odor is colorful. It's uniquity instead of iniquity.
Alcohol does that, and he's got super in the book says alcohol. I tell you, alcohol is supposed to produce one effect and one effect only.
Only one. Alcohol is a sedative.
Well, the dictionary does not call alcohol a drug, by the way. Only a dictionologist call it a drug. The dictionary defines alcohol as, quote, a limpid liquid with intoxicating features. Now, as a man, I don't like how that sounds. Not at all. Drug sounds better than the jazz words that are somewhat inflammatory that I can ignore. Alcohol, limpid and liquid with intoxicating features. Here's what alcohol is supposed to do. It is supposed to forget me. My central nervous system, my ability to judge, to have judgment. That's what it's supposed to do, and that's all that it does. If I drink too much too soon, it can kill me with an alcohol and toxicity. That's all it's supposed to do. And you know, for 9 out of 10 drinkers, that's what it does. And here's how you know it's happening. They say this.
Oh, other stuff. Honey, I'm starting to feel it. Oh, just one more. Just one more.
Hang in there. Keep with it. Drink past all that. You gotta get past all that. You gotta, it's like being a smoker. You gotta get past it. Then you're a man. I love what alcohol does for me. For them other roots people, it doesn't have that effect, even if they're heavy drinkers. Maybe they just like being drunk. But it doesn't perform that near spiritual experience. I'm going from butt ugly retarding to the captain of the ship. I was in the Navy. I was a bosun's mate petty officer. When I got back in Vietnam and started drinking a little bit more, I told people I was a captain. And I knew just enough about my ship to pull it off until I was sitting talking to another real captain. And you know, they don't like that. It's like when you're playing like you're a police officer. They don't like that. They think that's fear. The book talks about 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. I had 100 forms of self-delusion, I got to tell you. Budweiser, in my opinion, saved my life to find you. That's what I believe. I believe without alcohol, there'd be an RIP above me. I believe without, and I'm not building alcohol up, I'm just stating the fact for me. Without alcohol, I don't think I could have made it this long. I'm glad I found you. November 1972, I'm sleeping in my dumpster out behind Larry's Oasis, 3rd Street and 2nd Avenue, Moline, Illinois, right on the one ways. Larry's Oasis is and was the armpit. Girls, you know, how many of you have heard women in AA share how they were a fallen woman when they were drinking? And they talked about all the terrible things they did in bars. I gotta tell you, they never came to Larry's Oasis. We couldn't even give away free drink cards to make it work. Nobody came. Treatment centers wouldn't even let people come to our AA group. After we started, they said, oh, they're too sick. Think about that. I'm not banging nobody up. That's where I came from. That isn't meant to disrespect anybody. That's where I came from. And thank God I found people like you, because you know, it's funny how in AA we run into the same kind as we, so that we can get started in this thing. There's a lot of groups I couldn't fit into when I was new. I fit in with people that were carrying guns. I know I don't look that way today. Because I'm sensitive. November 1972, I'm sleeping in my dumpster. We called it the duplex. We did. We had two of them.
And I was sleeping in my bunk one night, but I wasn't sleeping. I was home though. And I heard a knock on the bunk lid. Rather metallic, if you will. And I thought, what have you got there? Well, I'm in the dumpster. I weigh 146 pounds. I've got no teeth. I smell. Long hair down to my butt, matted from living on the street. And I'm wondering who's out there. And I know it's not the dumpster pickup, man. When you live in a dumpster, you better know when they're coming. You hear me? I had to know who was out there. I opened up the door to my dumpster. You know who's looking down at me? My daddy. My dad had a look I never saw before in his eye. I want to tell you, I'm not banging out my dad. There's a kind of law out there, if you will, that suggests I'm supposed to honor my mom and my dad, and it doesn't say unless they've been alcoholic and bad. So I want to honor my mom and dad's memory. I don't mean to bang my daddy out. But that was a look in his eye I never knew before. It had a sparkle I didn't understand. See, my eyes were dead. My eyes were dead. I was dead. Spiritually dead. The only glimpse of hope I had was when I had Budweiser in me. Well, so fast, then I would come to life. Isn't that sad? Isn't that sick? My dad's looking down at me, and he says to me, Wayne, do you want to come home? I didn't know my dad was cross-stepping me. I didn't know my dad had found this thing called ANA. Someone had put a bug in my dad's ear to come find me one time, try. And he did. He said, Wayne, do you want to come home? And I looked around. So thanks, Dad, I'm doing fine. You go right there. Bye. And he left. I had resentment. He did not try hard enough. If he'd have worked in there, I'd have been glad to let him take me home. So he left right away. I'm trying. This is really distracting. Is it distracting you? It is. I know you all keep looking over here. If we ignore them, maybe they won't go to the bathroom until we're done talking. Because I'm about to tell them what that means, Scott. Here they come, it'll be in March. Where was I? That's it, I got to start over. I'm going to go around that guy. How's the cake you got over there? So my dad left, and something came over me, and I know it's happened to every one of you here this morning in your own way. Bottom is relative to the individual. We've heard it from every participant so far. Bottom is relative to the individual. My bottom was not the dumpster. It's where it began. It was not the dumpster. You see, bottom is a state of mind relative to the person suffering. Bottom can start in a dumpster. It can start in a 3-inch carpet face down. It can start in that Cadillac you parked on the front porch. We never know, do we? It's relative. Thank God that I know now it has to do with the suffering of my soul, my spirit. I'm a broken man. I'm a broken man. And life didn't break me. I believe I was born this way. I believe my spirit was somehow broken. And I believe life compounded the fracture. That's what I think. And as long as I look at it that way, life isn't the problem. Life holds the solution. I didn't know taking responsibility was a solution to my problem. I'll tell you that right now. I'd have looked at a different place. If I knew getting a job was a spiritual event, I'd have went to church for sure. I don't mean no disrespect to church, but I could hide out there. You guys are adamant about this responsibility crap. I don't mean no disrespect there either, because I think some of you know what I mean by that, don't you? I'm not saying it's okay not to be responsible. It's critically important that I take on life's responsibilities if I'm to be free. I want to suggest something to you newcomers before I forget. There's only two things AA has to offer me, and I'm glad I know that today. Only two. It isn't college. Lots of people go to college, and I think it's great. If your goal is to go to college, go sit in the front row, be the best student you can be, get the best grades you can be. That's not one of the motives of AA. They're getting that big job. Most of our speakers up for me. Right? Some of them are so rich they can't stand it. that most of all are educated beyond their means. And I'm an AA token loser. There's a friend of mine in Bellflower who said this. I'm living proof you can stay sober 27 years and not amount to a dang thing. That's true. And be happy about it. I'm not apologizing for my life. I'm doing the best I can one day at a time. I shoot up and I show up and I keep my AA word. It don't get much better than that. And I try to live life along spiritual lines as I grow and change. And that's a better thing. Of those two things that AA has to offer, one of them is the gift of knowing that I can't change you. Isn't that wonderful? To know I can't change you. But you know what the most powerful is to know I can't change me. I'm all done with changing life. I don't try to change at all. Now some of you might think, loser, you just want to stay the same. No. Spiritually, I understand what that means. I don't have the power to change me. If I did, that would make me the creator. The only thing I can change is my actions. And do you know that if I take the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, embrace the 12 traditions, both AA-wise and sober-wise, and take and believe in the concepts of service, if I put those three components into my existence, then I'd get the two gifts of AA. The first one is victory over alcohol. This is in the book. I wish it was mine. It's really good. I'd love to take credit. I'm the guy that she walked into a meeting, and when I see Bill and Bob's picture on the wall, I see mine floating up between us. Ain't you ever done that? I want to be the tri-founder of anything. First thing AA has to offer me, if I'm willing to give in and give up and sacrifice and give service to receive it, victory over alcohol and freedom from the bondage itself. That's it. Everything else is a gift of that freedom. And I'm so glad that I've gotten a modicum of that freedom. Am I free all the time? No, I'm not. You got the wrong alcohol. I'm not free all the time. I'm selfish and self-centered to the core. But I'm a lot better off than I was 27 years ago, one day at a time, I got to tell you. Am I still self-centered? Of course I am. I love us. I don't need no group hugs. I am a group hug. That night I jumped out of that dumpster with no freedom. You know alcohol, when I drink, that's what it does for me. It makes me have a sensation of victory. Alcohol literally, unbeknownst to me, frees me from the bondage of self. And when I'm not drinking, the memory of being free for 10 or 15 minutes causes me to have to drink again to seek more freedom from the bondage of self. And I'm going to suggest something to you, newcomer. If AA is not a sufficient substitute for that effect produced, I will drink again. And thank God for chapter 11, A Vision for You. It starts off with that. Do we have a sufficient substitute? Yes. And vastly more than that. Not only is it a sufficient substitute, but it's all power for me. I love AA. I believe when I'm plugged into AA, I'm plugged into that God people talk about. I don't understand that God of the universe. I don't. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you I do. But here's what I do believe. If I'm plugged into the three GODs of AA, you know what those are? They're in the book. They're in the big book in the 12 and 12. I'm not making these up. Three GODs. GOD number one, good AA design. That's the 12 steps. We have a design for living, a plan of action. Design, plan of action. So, when I plug into the 12 steps, is that not power? How about the other two GODs? Good orderly direction. In the 12 and 12, it says when I set foot on the path of solid honesty, straight thinking, and genuine humility, I will then show them that I'm willing to take advice and accept direction. Accept advice and take direction. Sponsorship. Every station in AA giving me direction. And the other GOD, good orderly discipline. Discipline. Taking my commitments and keeping them. Suiting up and showing up. doing what the old timers tell me to do because they have experience and it's worked for them. The three G-O-D. Now here's what I believe. If I plug into all three at the same time, I am therefore connected to the power that created those three. Is that not fair? So I stay plugged into that Christ consciousness because I know somehow we are connected to that greater party, to that greater power. And I believe I have a conscious contact with that power through you. You see, when I'm with you, I'm not with me. Right? Conversely speaking, when I'm not with you, I'm not with me. And we're not alone. There's a voice inside me called alcoholism. And here's how it goes in Wayne. I don't feel like I fit in. I don't belong. I'm not a part of it. I don't feel like I fit in AA. What's wrong with me? I'm different. Something's wrong here. This little voice goes up. Yeah, I know, Wayne. I know how you feel. I'm with you, buddy. I've been walking this dubious path one day at a time with you, Wayne. I've been there for you at every turn. When you called for me, I gave you relief. I'm your friend. My name is Budweiser. Drink me, and the memory and the recall. The suffering and the pain doesn't come forward. The feeling of relief and communion and unity at the bar. Remember? Remember that relief you get when you walk up towards the bar? When I would walk towards Larry Oasis on full agitating spins. I didn't even need to drink. I just touched the doorknob. You know, my shoulders, you know, they walk around like this. And you touch the door, and I see Rusty and Rocky shooting pool. I see Rocky put a quarter on the table for me. Come on, Wayne. You come down further. Larry's got 2 bottles of bed for me because he knows he's going to require 2 to start. I walk over and grab one. What do I do with it, folks? I don't drink it. I go like this. And then I walk around the pool table. I have experienced an abnormal reaction to alcohol. That's not normal. Those only earth drinkers do this. Hear me? That's not a normal reaction to alcohol. But it's funny. When I met you folks, when I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I get that same reaction. Watch how many people are holding their styrofoam cup. There goes your weekend. Of course, this means you're one of the sickest of the sick, so. I want to tell you about this. I make that trip out of that dumpster, and I walk by this place called Harvey's Restaurant. It's about midnight. I'm desperate. I'm hungry. I'm broke. And I did not know I was on my way to AA. I'm glad I didn't. I would have turned left. So I looked inside the restaurant, and I saw this little old lady come in the coffee bar. Small night restaurant. Little mom and pop restaurant. Harvey's was its name. And I sized up immediately and knew I could work her. Because I know how to work people, don't you? I know how to get a freebie. So I walk in. I let her notice how miserable I am. She comes over with this big grin on her face. That should have been a giveaway. If I'd have met you before, I'd have known what she was. She came over and she says, "Hi, sweetie, what can I do for you?" And I started telling her what she could do for me. I told her about the alcoholic home. I told her about being sexually abused by 3 men in my family from the time I was 8 to the time I was almost 14, which is a fact. I told her about the violence. I told her about Vietnam. I told her about make stuff up. She had tears rolling down her eyes. I moved in for the kill. You know why she was crying? I come to find out later. It's because she was an Al-Anon. And she knew she found someone for her Harvey to work with. Miss Linda, I personally think you should wear a ribbon at work this is Eleanor. She gave me a job to do. She let me mop a rack of diamond floors for 2 salty sandwiches on her wheat toast. What a deal. Her wheat for the husk. You know why I found out she gave me sausage sandwiches on her wheat? Because she knew I could chew that. I didn't have any teeth. And that's that. Ain't that how we are?
And then I slept out back in the car. And a while later, Harvey comes in. Harvey's in this thing called ANA. I didn't know I was coming to meet you people. Harvey comes and sees me. He's got his hands in his pockets. So I don't hear any noise. That means trash. Right? He pulls his hand out and he's got this gold coin in it. And he's like them old timers, you know how they are. He got me to shake hands with him, and he put that coin, which was to get me to shake his hand, because I want the coin. So he shake his hand. He won't go. They won't let you go until you surrender. Okay, stick your hand back. They ain't got no teeth. It's hard to argue. Can I have my hand back quick? So then he takes the coin out and he says, here, I heard you need some help. Now we're getting somewhere. He says, you take this, one side has two A's. You've seen it. And on the other side, it's got some stupid prayer. God grant me something. It didn't say nothing about money, food, or shelter. I noticed that right away. And it's too big for a slug. But then he said, you take this tomorrow about noontime down to 410 16th Street in the basement. You show up, you show him that coin, you tell him Harvey sent you, they'll be expecting that. He didn't tell me I was going there. He led me to believe I was going to get a handout. You know how they are. The only reason I went there was to get a handout. So I did it about noontime. And he said, if I look down the cellar, there would be a light bulb hanging on a cord. And if it was on, go in, go there. So I went there. About 4 to 12, and I looked down in the cellarway. The cellar windows were painted black. Found out later that was for anonymity purposes. But can you imagine what my mind was like at that moment? Blackened windows. Light bulb hanging on a cord. He said it was on, go in. But no, it was flickering. So what does that mean to you? I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Harvey said it's on, go in. He didn't tell me what to do, and it was flickering. So I started clicking. Then I started doing alcoholics and aerobics. If you ever see somebody outside the door of your group going like this, don't give them a pill. Pull them into the room. They're trying to make a decision. I couldn't take it. I had to leave. I couldn't do it. I waited for the light to stay on, but I wanted it. I tried to will it. Stop! I had another drink. So I went to Larry's Races, Moose and Drinks, to make a long story short, about 8 o'clock that night, I had made my mind up. I now have it coming. So I'm going to get what I got coming. Some say I did. I don't even care if the lights are on or gone. Now I'm going in. I failed to notice that basement door was 5 feet. I'm 6'3". I charged in there like I knew where I was going. The door header whacked me right across the eyebrow, and I slid into my first meeting about last night. Inside the door was this round table of 6 or 7 old men who must have been discussing death and dying. And I slid right between 2 of the oldest, ugliest ones there. And this guy, he gets up out of his chair, and he looks at me and goes just like this. He says, slide right in here, Billy. We got a rent to fit every nut that comes in the door. I recognize he says, my name's Barney, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to be your sponsor. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. I don't know if you knew the sponsor was when you got here, but I did. I played softball for Anheuser-Busch. They paid our entry fee in the tournament. They gave us free beer. Oh, man, that's good. Boy, was that a delusion. For the next 5 years, I went to meetings and drank every day. Could not drink. Drank before me because Bob was always at the meeting. I didn't like Bob. Bob was, in my opinion, a menace to life. God has been sober ever since AA was burned by God. God came to his first meeting and hasn't found the necessary to take a drink of alcohol. Since his first day here, and he had to say it every Friday night. And every time Bob said it, he looked right at me. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know what, Bob? Might not hurt you to have one or two. How did you see Bob going into me? I'd have to get a six-pack. I don't know. November 8, 1977, I want to tell you about the miracle that's called Alcoholics Anonymous. The miracle isn't Wayne Butler. The miracle is Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get to participate freely. November 8, 1977. November 7th, my sponsor Bernie got me to give him my word that I would come to the noon meeting on the 8th. He asked me, he says, can you go without a drink? Because I hadn't been drunk for a couple of days. And I gave him my word. He says, if you give me your word, I'll meet you to meet. He never asked me to give his word before. I gave him my word. Around about midnight, I realized it was a new day. But something in me said, no, that ain't what he meant. So on my way to the noon meeting about 9 in the morning, because he said, pray, I saw him got a six-pack of bread while I was running away. I'm sitting on the front steps of my home group, the Moline group, drinking that six-pack of beer, waiting for the noon meeting. That's the best I can do. There's three empty cans on the ground, three in my lap, and I have every intention of drinking them. And guess who shows up about 10 o'clock early for the meeting? Bernie. He's like a maggot after a bad piece of meat. He always showed up when I was drinking. I said, Jake, you ever show up when I'm not drinking? He says, you never are. He doesn't even look at the beer. He does what the old timers do. He ignored the beer. Said he did something even more despicable. He looked me right in the eye, causing me to look at the beer. And he said, Benny, come in and help me set up for the meeting. And I looked at Ben and I said, I'll be in a minute. And then something came over me. I didn't know what it was, but I do now. It was my moment. And I was awake to it. For some reason. I wanted to help Bernie set up. I don't know why, I just did. So I hid those other three cans of beer in the bush in case Bob shows up. And yeah, I thought, there it is. And I wanted to help Bernie set up for the meeting. And then I forgot myself, and I sat down at the arounder table. Bernie's at the newcomer bar talking to a brand new newcomer. By the way, the difference between a newcomer and the arounder table, the arounder table is where they put us slippers. Because they don't want us influencing those who haven't been influenced yet. Yeah, that's the love. So I'm sitting by a round table. My sponsors at the coffee bar are talking to somebody I never met before. And my sponsor always said, pray for him. And I said, I did. I was hoping he would die. I want my sponsor back. Right about that time, another newcomer got tossed in the door, I think by his wife. He comes stumbling across the threshold. He's drunk. I did what Bernie did 5 years earlier. I jumped up out of my chair because I noticed Bernie was busy. I went right up to this guy and got it. I don't got no teeth. I'm Randy. I'm an alcoholic. And then I said three words I hadn't said for 5 years. And I'm an alcoholic. And I heard it. I went, too late, you guys. And I said, I'm going to be your sponsor. That's what Bernie said. He goes like this. That's a sponsor. I went, shut up, you're new. My sponsor heard what was going on. He abandoned his newcomer. Just like that. Came over to punch Bob. You know I'm giving him the deal. Give me. Give me. Give me. Marty comes, he gets that far from my face. And my sponsor literally held my life in his hands. He could have said, "Dummy, you can't sponsor him. See, you've been sober a year. You know some of that crap that's coming in here from outside? Or how about you can't sponsor him? See, you've worked 5 steps." That's another new one coming from outside. But,
for instance, aren't you glad no one told Bill Wilson?
No.
He got sober December 11, 1934. Aren't you glad Dr. Silkworth didn't say, "Okay, Bill, you got to work the steps. Bill, you got to get a year before you can talk to any newcomers."
And how about after he let that guy live in his house and then cut himself? Can't you just see it today?
"Well, Bill, something's not working about your process."
Just ridiculous around here sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is a simple program. Am I more of an effective sponsor today? Of course I am. But one alcoholic can carry a message of one day for someone who has no days. You understand what I'm saying?
And I agree. There's a lot of people around here who are more effective at carrying the message and sponsoring people than others. But that ain't what this ain't treatment. This ain't therapy. This is one alcoholic, broken and busted, sharing that message that they have one moment of sobriety. You see, people that are new don't necessarily identify with my 27 years. But they identify with 3 days.
27 years? Impossible!
How'd you get 3 days?
Can you see their eyes?
I love it. My sponsor took me. Yeah, we are. I thought I was sponsored Jimmy. My sponsor got him off to the side. He says, "Jimmy, let's let Wayne continue to think he's your sponsor." "You call me every day." I thought I was his sponsor when he was 10.
You ever done that? I did. I always got to get Jimmy's cake. My sponsor stepped aside.
I want to tell you this one story. I'll be done. I hope you can tell I've got some recovery here. I went to my first convoy, got about 5 minutes left there. My sponsor took me to my first convention when I was three weeks sober. I didn't have any teeth. You guys can be rude, let me tell you. You call it love, but you found every single feeling I had. It was one. You didn't mean to. I was sensitive. Somewhat. My sponsor was kind and loving in his own way. He said something like this. He says, "You know, dummy, AA is a program of attraction. And you are somewhat of a distraction." He says, "Why don't we go shopping so I can take you to that convention where there's going to be 1,200 alcoholics at the Sheridan Inn right down in Illinois on Thanksgiving 1977. Okay. He's taking me to Salvation Army, his favorite department store for newcomers. He says, "I'll buy you a nicer set if we figure out you're going to stick." Yeah, I always put conditions on that. So he takes me to Salvation Army. This is November 1977, and disco is out. But they dropped everything off at the Salvation Army on the road. The only suit they had that would fit me was his lime green double neck polyester loose leather shirt. Inside of that bright yellow lining with dark green tennis rackets. We bought it. Found me a brushed polyester Cisco shirt with the collars down to here. It only had 2 buttons, one here and one here. It had animals all around. It looked really horrible with the tie he made me wear. We went to the shooting department for the only 13.5-inch gunboat they had in supply. There's this pair of old black and brown boxer Oxford disco platform shoes. With a 2.5-inch sole and a 4-inch heel.
The guy over on Buck 85, he dressed me up, took me to that convention, stood me at the front door, and made me a greeter. Speakers that weekend, I didn't know what speakers were. I found out there are no speakers. There are no speakers. Are you hearing me? There are no speakers. There are any AAs that are willing to give up their weekend, their days, and their nights to come carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what he said. And the men and women who carried the message that weekend in Rock Island, Illinois, instead of being with the family, giving up their time and their efforts at home, was a guy by the name of Chuck C. Then his wife also with him. A guy by the name of Norm Alfie was there. A guy by the name of Donnie Shore. A guy by the name of Tom Brady from Charlotte, North Carolina. They all passed away, that's why I gave you their last name. And a guy by the name of Johnny H. and Clan G.I. That was the six people that carried the message, and they infected me with something I didn't understand, called enthusiasm. And I didn't like it. It felt weird. They told me if I would give up and give in and continue to be the center of this thing and override my best thinking and judgment and just do the dues, that one day I would be a free man, free from the bondage of self. I have no idea that would come true. I have a 17-year-old son. He's just turning 18 in a week. He's graduating high school June 3rd. He notified me. He got a hold of me, finally. Now, I'm scheduled to speak in Bali, Indonesia this June 3rd. I want to go to Bali. You know what I mean? It took me 1 minute after I got that call from my son inviting me to his high school graduation. 1 minute it took me to call Bali and ask him if I could beg off because I'm going to my son's graduation. Isn't that cool? It got nothing to do with me. It's got to do with you. Because I've been with you for 27 years and 6 months now. And you have given me the necessary power. I'm moving back to California August 1st. I'm getting a job. My sponsor is a guy by the name of Vince. I'm looking forward to going home. California saw fit to issue me a gun permit last year. Yeah, that ought to make you feel safe. Anybody need a sponsor? I love this life. If you're new or need to be renewed, I want to invite you into this way of life. And I strongly suggest that you grasp all three and make it a collective effort. And I believe you too will find victory over alcohol and freedom from the bondage of self.